Today, I want to talk about what used to be a homework problem in this course, but in all the years I've taught it, only one student ever attempted it, and that student did get it right, but it's really complicated, so I've decided not to assign it. I'd still like to go through it with you, because you'll learn a lot about band structure and the Kronig-Penney model. And the assignment was the following. On the top of the page, you see figure 5 from chapter 7 of Kittel. And in the lower part of the figure, this is chapter 7, figure 6. And the problem was, how do you derive figure 6 given figure 5? They both involve curved lines, but it's not simply a matter of cutting and pasting the curved line from one figure and then pasting it into the bottom figure. The functions are completely different. So I'd like to explain what each figure represents and how you get from one to the other. To make things even more confusing, there's a typo in the top figure. This epsilon here on the vertical axis shouldn't be there. That is not energy that you're plotting vertically. This, the P over capital KA sine KA, that's what you're plotting vertically. So just eliminate the epsilon. Okay, and you should follow along after you've watched the videos that I assigned. In particular, there's this video by Professor Harbola from the Indian Institute of Technology, IIT, on exactly this problem on the Kronig-Penney model. And you can also watch the two lectures by Alan Adams from MIT, but the first one it will be most important for this application. Now let me explain a little bit of the notation. So if we scroll up just a little bit to the top of the discussion in Kittel, where he starts talking about the Kronig-Penney model, the idea is you have some periodic potential, which is given by the positive ion cores in the metal crystal lattice, and you might say, well, why don't I model these more precisely? Why don't I use some approximation to the exact potentials, maybe a Coulomb potential or something like that? And the answer is do the simple problem first. So this looks like a toy model, but actually there's a lot of physics that you can extract from it. The important part is that the potential be periodic. It turns out not to really matter what the form of this potential is. So if you use rectangular pits like this in the square well potential, this is a finite square well, and then you change it to a more realistic Coulomb potential, the answer really doesn't change very much. So the physics is in the periodicity of the lattice, not the exact shape of the wells. And on the first pass, Kittel does what Professor Harbola does. He says, choose an energy range that will be about at this level, so below the top of the wells. And if you're inside the well, if the energy of the particle is greater than the potential, you can take the bottom of the well to be zero. We had a homework problem like that. If you change this to a non-zero number, all you do is change the phase of the wave function, and that's not observable. And so if you're inside and the energy is above the energy of the potential, then you get plane wave solutions. And that's written here. And if you're inside the barrier, so that the energy of the particle is less than the potential, then you get tunneling solutions. And that's represented like so. And you'll notice that everyone who attacks this problem chooses different letters for the variables. That makes things confusing. And so I would encourage you to solve it yourself, choose your own set of variables, and then work with them. But if we want to understand Kittel's figure, then we have to see what he's doing. In the plane wave solutions, there is a capital K up in the exponent for these oscillatory, these are sines and cosine solutions, complex exponentials. And that K is just a proxy. That K is related to the energy of the particle through this. This is just a non-relativistic expression. This says the energy is P squared over 2m, momentum squared over 2m. The momentum is H bar K. Okay, so whenever you see a capital K, you can just solve it for the energy epsilon and think of the capital K as a proxy for the energy of the particle. capital K is not going to be the crystal momentum. And in the same way down here, for the tunneling solutions, the capital Q is also related to the energy. Let's see where, here. So whenever you see a capital Q, you can imagine solving this equation for Q, and it will be a function of the top of the potential minus the energy of the particle times twice the mass over h bar, and then square root of all that. So those capital K and capital Q are just shorthand, so I don't have to keep writing the energy epsilon or U minus epsilon everywhere. Just it cleans up the equations a little bit. But think of capital K and capital Q as proxies. And then the wells have some width. So the bottom of the well extends from zero to little a, and the height of the barrier extends from a to a plus b. So this width is lowercase b. This width on the bottom, highlight it, is lowercase a. And that's the same notation that both of the professors used in the videos. And then this is one of your homework assignments, to solve the Schrodinger equation for this finite square well potential, and use the continuity of the wave function psi and the continuity of the derivative of the wave function psi prime, and then also use the block condition. That's capital B-L-O-C-H, as in right here, Felix Bloch. Use the block condition. And now there's another variable. There's a lowercase k in the exponential for the block condition. And in the notes and in Alan Adams' lectures, that's what he's calling lowercase q. So like I said, you have to be careful because people change the notation on you all the time. But okay, so there are two k's. There's a lowercase k, which is the crystal momentum. Well, h bar times that would be the crystal momentum. And then there's a capital K, which is just a proxy for the energy epsilon. Okay, and your homework assignment was to solve the four equations. There are four because you're going to look at the continuity of psi and psi prime at x equals a and at x equals a plus b. So that's four equations altogether. And with Mathematica, this should be easy. Cattell calls it tedious. It is if you're going to do it by hand, but with a symbol manipulation program, it should be short work. Okay, but now what I want to do is take these limits. Take the limit as b goes to zero, and the height of the barrier becomes infinitely high. So if you look back up at the model, if you let B go to zero, that's this width. So we're going to let this become infinitesimally small, but we're going to take the height, if I can draw on it, yeah, take the height U naught to infinity, and that will become a delta function. If you take the limit in such a way that the area under that rectangle doesn't change. So as it becomes skinnier, it also becomes higher. And that's a delta function potential. It turns out, rather than taking this solution and taking the limits as b goes to zero and u goes to infinity in a certain way, such that the quantity q squared times ab over 2 is a constant. Rather than doing that, it's easier just to do what Professor Harbola did, and solve the Kronig-Penney model from scratch using the delta function potential, because in that case, there are only two unknowns. And so instead of getting four equations in four unknowns, you get two equations in two unknowns, and you get to the solution faster that way. But in any case, you wind up with this equation. So this is not for the finite square well potentials. These are for the delta function potentials in the Kronig-Penney model. And what is special about this p? Why is p 3/2/2? Well, it could have been any number. P is this dimensionless quantity. It's q squared, but remember what q was. Let's see if I can find it again. Yeah. So q was the top of the barrier minus the energy of the particle times twice the mass divided by h bar squared and then square root. That will get you the q. from this equation, or actually you need q squared. And then A and B are related to the two widths that are involved in the barrier. So again, this is lowercase a across the bottom, and this is lowercase b across the top. And altogether, q squared ba over 2 is dimensionless, but it tells you something about the aspect ratio of the potential, or how strong it is. And it could have been any number, any dimensionless number p. You have to choose one to make the plot, and so Cattell has just arbitrarily chosen 3 pi over 2. Could have been anything. Could have been 17, could have been root 91, whatever. And all right, so now that we're closer to understanding the picture, let's see what we're plotting here. So remember, capital K is just a proxy for the energy. He's written it down here below. So whenever you see capital A, just think some function of the energy epsilon. And capital K times A is the spacing between the wells, that's dimensionless. And so he chooses to plot capital K A horizontally because it's dimensionless. And then vertically, remember I said not the epsilon, he's plotting this. That function is the left-hand side of the equation that results from looking at the Kronig-Penney model. So he's got capital P, which is arbitrary, divided by capital K A, and then times sine of capital K A plus cosine of capital K A. So that's the solid curve, right? That's the solid squiggly curve. It's a cosine plus a damped sine. So the cosine and sine have the same argument, capital K A, but then the sine is divided by capital K A. And as you go further and further out, that 1 over capital K A in the denominator will eventually knock the sine down to nothing. And then at really large K A, this will just be a pure cosine. But if you're near the origin, if you take the limit as capital K A goes to 0, well, cosine of 0 is 1, but then sine of capital K A divided by capital K A is also 1. This is the sinc function that goes to 1. So it's 1 times P. And so the height of this function is 1 plus P. So the way he's chosen it, if P is 3 pi over 2, this is 5 pi over 2 height. But remember I said the P is arbitrary. Okay, so that explains the solid curve. And then what about the shading? Well, if you look at the equation on the right-hand side, you're going to set that equal to cosine of lowercase k a, and remember lowercase k is the crystal momentum, what the other professors call lowercase q. And this cosine on the right-hand side is trapped between plus 1 and minus 1. So this horizontal line represents plus 1, the other line represents minus 1. As long as you're between those two horizontal lines, you will get a solution to the top equation, to this equation. This equation has no solution when the left-hand side is greater than 1 or less than negative 1. And so every time that happens, there's gray shading. So these regions are forbidden. But this little track here between plus 1 and minus 1, those are valid solutions to the equation. Here's another one. Here's a third. There's an infinite number. And the problem is, how do you turn those allowed regions of the curve, how do you turn them into the bands? Okay, now let's look at figure 6. Now I'm plotting lowercase ka. Above I was plotting capital ka. Remember that was just a proxy for the energy, but now this is the crystal momentum, and the only reason for multiplying it by a, the lattice spacing, the well spacing, is to make this dimensionless. So when lowercase k is pi over a, that's right here. So that's the edge of the first Briouin zone. Let's see if I can draw on the figure. I cannot. But right here, that's the edge of the first Briouin zone, and then 2 pi is the edge of the second Briouin zone, and then not shown are the values for negative lowercase k a. Just mirror reflect this graph in the vertical axis. It's mirror symmetric. Okay, and now I'm going to switch to the Mathematica notebook that I created to convert figure 5 into figure 6. All right. So first of all, I reproduced figure five in, I just translated everything into Mathematica. So there's that arbitrary constant capital P, tells you the aspect ratio of the wells. And I'm, for variables, I'm using capital KA and lowercase KA without a space. And so just think of capital KA as the variable. It's a dimensionless variable. I could have called it X, I could have called it anything, but to make it kind of look like the figure, I called it capital KA. And then down below, there'll be a lowercase KA to go along with it. And what I've done here, this function, P divided by capital KA times the sine of capital KA plus cosine of capital KA, that's the left-hand side of this equation from Cattell. That's this. And it's also the solid curve in figure five. And then I've plotted two horizontal lines, plus one and minus one. And that reproduces the figure in Cattell. So we're on the right track. Now I want to find these intersection points. And the command I used was find root. So now I'm going to look for solutions. Let me switch back to Cattell for a second. Now let's look at the right-hand side of that equation. I'm going to pick different values for lowercase ka. And when I take the sine of those different values of lowercase ka, cosine rather, when I take the cosine of those values, I'll get some numbers. And the first number is when I set lowercase ka equal to zero, and then the cosine of lowercase a is one. So that's this one right here in the equation. This is a double equal sign because I'm not setting the left-hand side equal to the right-hand side. I'm comparing them. This is the syntax for the Mathematica find root command. And so I'm telling it, find the value of capital KA on the left side of the equation that is appropriate when lowercase KA is equal to zero. And I could have, here I could have written cosine of lowercase A. I just, cosine of zero is one. So I just took a shortcut and called it one. And then I have to tell it where to look. And so the syntax is start looking for capital KA roughly around pi. It's not equal to pi, but look there because there are going to be many solutions for capital KA. And I want to hit the correct one. The right answer is capital KA is about 2 1/4, a little bit more than 2 1/4. And that's right here. That's this point. So the point where, let's see if I can highlight. No. The point where the arrow is located is where lowercase k is zero. So lowercase KA is zero. That's the crystal momentum, lowercase KA. But it's where the energy is related this way. It's where capital KA is about 2 1/4. So you can figure out what the energy epsilon is corresponding to that point. And we will do that in just a second. And then again, do it over here. So this is where lowercase KA is equal to pi. And if you solve the equation, it is also where capital KA is equal to pi. So both lowercase KA and capital KA are both equal to pi at this point right here. Again, where the arrow is pointing. And then I have to find more. There's this one. Here, lowercase KA is still pi. Lowercase KA is pi at this point on the left and at this point on the right. But capital KA is different. And so I tell it to look for capital KA, but start looking around 1.5 pi, and it came up with an answer of 4.7, which looks right. If you follow this point up to the horizontal axis, it looks like about 4.7, so that's correct. And then this point corresponds to lowercase k equal to 2 pi, and so the cosine of lowercase 2 pi is 1. Again, I took a shortcut. And then solve for capital KA in that case, and I got capital KA is 6. So that corresponds to this point right here, a little bit more than 6. This also corresponds to lowercase KA equals 2 pi. So this is 2 pi, this is 2 pi, this is lowercase KA equals pi, this is also pi. there the equation will be double valued, and you'll see that that's correct. When we draw the energy bands, they're right on top of each other. It's double valued at those two points. And again, I solve for the capital Ka, and it's 7.4. That's right here. So that's this point. If I trace it down to the horizontal axis, about 7.4. And then I did that for a few more values. Okay, now, if you look back at Cattell, when he plots the energy epsilon in figure 6, it's divided again, so it's dimensionless. So he says epsilon in units of h bar squared pi squared over 2ma squared. And you'll recognize that h bar squared pi squared over 2ma squared, that's the ground state in the infinite square well. But it, again, it's just some energy. And so this vertical axis is dimensionless. These numbers don't have any units. 5, 10, 15 are not in joules or ergs or anything like that, because he's divided the epsilon by h bar squared pi squared over 2ma squared. And to do the same thing, I've written the energy in terms of capital Ka. Remember, that's the proxy for the energy. To get it dimensionless, to get it to match Cattell's version, all I have to do is divide by pi and then square it. And I'll let you, you should do that. You should go through the exercise and see, given the definition of capital Ka, that this reproduces exactly what he's plotting on the vertical axis of the figure. Okay, now I do this twice. The first time, this is just to see if we're on the right track. So these straight lines on the energy diagram, this is dimensionless energy plotted vertically, and it is dimensionless crystal momentum plotted horizontally. The figure in, 6 in Cattell, those are not straight lines, but I just want to see if I got the endpoints right. And so I take the value of capital Ka that I got from the find root command. For example, this one, the first time I used the find root command, I wanted to get the capital Ka corresponding to this point right here, and it came out to be a little bit more than 2.25. So I take that value of capital Ka, and I figure out what the energy is by plugging it into this equation for epsilon. So that's done here. And I'm plotting versus lowercase ka, the crystal momentum. So the lowercase ka was 0. And the capital Ka was 2.25. And when I plug it in, I get whatever, I get the epsilon, I get the dimensionless energy corresponding to that value of capital Ka. That's this point right here. That's the left point on the graph. And then this is the right-hand point. The right-hand point is where the crystal momentum is lowercase Ka is equal to pi. And that's also where, let me scroll up a little bit, that's also where capital Ka was equal to pi. And if capital Ka is equal to pi, then the energy is just epsilon of pi. So that's this point. And I just told Mathematica joined equals true. So it drew a straight line between lowercase ka equals 0 and the appropriate epsilon, and then lowercase ka equals pi and the appropriate epsilon. So the endpoints are correct. The shape of the curve is not. This curve shouldn't be a straight line. We'll fix that in a minute. But the endpoints are right, and the energy gaps are correct. So this gap matches the gap in Cattell. That's this gap right here. The spacing is exactly right. Here's the spacing of the between the second and third energy bands. That second gap is also reproduced exactly. That's right here. So now we just have to get the curves to bend instead of be straight lines. All right, this is a little complicated, so let me explain what's going on here. I have to use an interpolation function. So I can't do it analytically. If you were tasked with doing this on paper, you wouldn't be able to find a function that produces these curved lines. And so the next best thing is to do it numerically. So that's what I've done here. First, I make a table, And the table is composed of pairs of points. So the first point in the pair, the horizontal coordinate, is just lowercase ka. That's along this horizontal axis. That's related to the crystal momentum. And then the second point, the vertical point, is given by epsilon. But first, to get the epsilon, I have to solve this equation for capital KA. And again, you can't do that analytically, so I'm going to do it numerically. But I take a given lowercase KA, and I plug it into this equation. The lowercase KA is found on the right-hand side in the cosine. And now I want to solve this equation numerically for capital KA, which appears in three places on the left side of the equation. And I do that for 20 points between lowercase k equals 0, which is the origin, and lowercase ka equals pi, which is right here. So this is the range of lowercase ka from 0 to pi, and this says chop that interval into 20 equal steps. And so the first time I run this find root command, I find the capital ka for lowercase ka equals 0. The next time I do it, it's for lowercase ka equals 1 pi over 20. The next time I do it, it's for lowercase ka equals 2 pi over 20, and so forth until I get to 20 pi over 20, until I get to the right endpoint, which is lowercase ka equals pi. So I'll wind up with 20 values of lowercase ka and correspondingly 20 values of capital ka. But then I don't want to plot that. I want to plot the energy. So the first thing to do is to make an interpolation function. So smoothly connect those 20 points, lowercase ka versus capital ka, connect those points smoothly, and then take the epsilon, take the energy function of that interpolation function. So the way to read that is as follows. I know what the lowercase ka's are. Those are the independent variables, right? I can choose those to be anything along this horizontal axis. This interpolation function E1 converts that into capital ka's. So E1 of lowercase ka, you can read as capital ka. And then I want the energy, and so the energy function of capital ka is this. Okay, so now I have the energy epsilon of capital Ka, and I can plot the energy versus lowercase Ka from 0 to pi. And I called that plot PC1. And if I scroll down, that's this red line here is PC1. This is the energy versus lowercase Ka, which is what I want to plot. And then repeat, lather, rinse, repeat. So I make a second table. Again, there are pairs of points. The first point in the pair is lowercase ka. That's the crystal momentum. That's the independent variable. Could be anything you want. The y-coordinate is capital ka, obtained from solving this equation numerically using the find root command. And again, do that 20 times between lowercase ka equals pi and lowercase ka equals 2 pi. That's this range. This is pi, and this is lowercase ka equals 2 pi. See, a little bit more than 6. Again, chop it up into 20 pieces, make a smooth interpolation. And again, this function, this interpolation function E2, is going to give me capital ka. So everything I just highlighted in blue in the box, that's capital ka. And then take the energy function of capital ka and plot that versus lowercase a from 0 to 2 pi, and that's what I called PC2. PC2 is this curve right here. And then repeat for the third and the fourth bands. And this, if you compare this top figure to Cattell, that's exactly his figure 6 in chapter 7. Everything is exact. The band gap spacing between the curly lines is the same. The shape of the curly lines is the same. So we've done it. We've reproduced the figure after a lot of work, granted. And then remember, you should mirror reflect this graph. And so the graph is a distorted parabola. Just for comparison, remember the first thing we did was to plot straight blue lines, which we knew were incorrect, just to get the spacing right. And you can see the straight blue lines and the curly red lines match at the endpoint. So the gaps were correct. This naive way of doing it did reproduce the energy gaps. Those are correct. And if you don't look super careful, the blue line does a pretty good job of reproducing the red line. It's just that the red line has some curvature and the blue line didn't. But if you just wanted a zeroth order approximation, the straight blue lines would be fine. And so the red lines are the exact answer. Well, exact, you can make it more exact. I chopped up the interval into 20 pieces to produce this interpolation. You could chop it up into 100 pieces if you want to get an even better curve. Okay, and done.